This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Last year, City Council allocated $250,000 in human service funding to go toward anti-violence programs. That included in-school violence prevention, coaching, and the creation of youth councils. Here to discuss the programs designed to reduce violence are YWCA Greater Cincinnati Director of Youth Services and Transform, Jennifer Milani, Santa Maria Community Services Youth Development Program Director, Jim Holmstrom, the Urban League's Dorothy Smoot, who is Executive Director of the Community Police Partnering Center, and Cincinnati Inquirer reporter Sharon Coolidge. And you can join our conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having
us. Good to be here.
Hello.
Sherry, let's start by talking about where things stand in Cincinnati. 2016 saw a drop in violent crime. Homicides and shootings were down by double digits. But then the first 3 months of 2017 started horribly for the city. We had a big spike in violence, especially when you factor in the Cameo nightclub mass shooting. So what's the trend at this point in the year as we reach the halfway point?
You know, things have really leveled out. The city manager just sent out a memo kind of outlining things like that. We are just a titch above on shootings, I think that memo said. And without Cameo, we actually would be down a little bit. And so, I mean, that was really good news from the perspective of what's going on in the city crime-wise.
Now, after that first quarter, what were the things the city did to respond to that surge in violence we saw so early on in the year?
You know, the city, and it really wasn't just in responding to that surge. And, you know, the police department will tell you, like, if you get to that point, you're doing it too late. They do a program called PIVOT, and I don't remember what that stands for at the moment, but it's really like place-based policing. They watch every day. Like, every single day, they look at shootings and all of the different crimes. The statistics are so advanced at this point, they're able to know. They look and they see where there's problems. Like, for instance, there was an area on the west side of town where there were a lot of open drug deals. They took the parking spaces away and that cleaned up that area, like, right away. And so they're doing things like that to combat this crime.
Dorothy, you know a little bit more about PIVOT?
Yes, PIVOT is Place-Based Investigations of Violent Offender Territory.
Okay, so this is actually like a tracking effort to see what areas are particularly...
It's more of a problem-solving effort by the police department and the community and the city departments to address specific violent territory areas. And it could be down to an address.
So honestly, though, like, we're talking about this anti-violence money today. And, of course, they want to reduce crime. You hear about that inside City Hall every day. And that's really, like, police department things. Like, anti-violence. You know, the money that's going for all of that and the programs that they're looking at for anti-violence, these programs, I feel like, are really aimed at helping people and helping the people who live in the communities deal with the violence. It's about reducing violence, but it's more about how people are feeling. If you hear the council members talk about why they want to do these things.
Well, it's actually a public health model that they've adopted. You know, when someone has a disease, you work with the people who have the disease, but you also work with those who don't have it to prevent it. So I think there's an understanding that a lot of violence, people that commit violence, who either experienced violence when they were young or had a lot of trauma in their lives. So you're absolutely right. There's a focus on community to help those individuals to heal from that trauma. All of our programs involve what's called trauma-informed care. That's a very important part of it.
Yeah, Jennifer, how important is that to deal with this from the human side?
Oh, I think it's really important. I think one of the things that we really try to do is spread awareness to the issue. So how does all the trauma and all the violence in the neighborhoods impact, in our case, the youth, because we do school-based services. So once we've sort of started spreading that awareness, then we can educate people and try to impact change. But the first step is bringing in awareness to how is all that violence impacting the children, because a lot of times they think that it's not necessarily, if they weren't the direct impact of the violence, that maybe it's not really bothering them. But we really know that it is having an impact, and so our programs are really aimed at bringing awareness to the youth that they don't have to continue to live in violence areas, there are ways to protect themselves while they're in those areas, because as youth, they don't have a choice. They can't get up and move to another area.
Well, it really came to a head this year during the budget. There was $250,000 in the budget for programs that do just this kind of thing. And council was like, but do we want to do more? And so that kind of, it really brought this, it became really a main issue of this year's budget. How much money do we want to give to this? And in the end, they gave an additional $350,000, bringing the total amount to $600,000. But they can't really do a lot of things without arguing. And so there was a lot of arguments about where this money might go. But
and you're talking about city council arguing, right?
So many good causes, so little funding.
Yeah.
Yes. Adamant, though, that they would do this kind of programming.
Is that the biggest challenge that each of you is facing? Is it funding? Is that the primary thing?
Well, funding is always a challenge for any program. Yeah. One of the things that we do at the Community Police Partnering Center, though, is attempt to build community capacity to address its issues, so that we can leverage resources in the community to help to prevent some of these issues.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. And let's have each of you tell us about your organizations. And Dorothy, tell us some more about the Community Police Partnering Center. What's its approach and what's its overall mission?
The Community Police Partnering Center grew directly out of the Collaborative Agreement of 2002. And the goal was to help to engage community and law enforcement in addressing issues of crime and violence in communities by helping them to identify the root causes of problems and then to try to find responses to those root causes. I'll never call it solutions but responses to those problems. And so the Partnering Center, when we applied for the funding through Human Services this year, was responding directly to what we heard from communities, particularly the Westwood community, where that pivot intervention project was going on, the problem solving was going on. The community identified youth councils as one of the things that they felt would help to address the issues in their particular community. So we're engaging the community to address what they have raised as a particular concern.
So you're working at reaching kids before they reach their, I guess, their 20s, and this becomes a bigger problem.
Yes, to engage them in their community, because one of the reasons that people engage in violence or any of the, substance abuse and those kinds of things is oftentimes they're disconnected. And so the goal of our program is to reconnect the young people to their community and to the adults in their community and to learn how to work together.
So what's been the response from the young people who are taking part in this program?
We've had about 40 young people respond. And our particular effort is really interesting because it's not only Westwood, but East Westwood. And the two communities have come together and are doing a joint community council because they felt that they wanted to teach the young people to practice the same things that they wanted for the adult community, which was collaboratively working together.
Mm-hmm. And Jim, tell us about the effort that you're working on. This is the Lower Price Hill Collaborative for Violence Prevention.
Right. And I want to emphasize that collaborative piece. There are about 8 different entities that have all come together and agreed that in Lower Price Hill, this is an issue that that needs to be focused on. So the collaborative is made up of Santa Maria Community Services, Community Matters, Education Matters, the State Avenue Church of Christ, the Euler School, the Price Hill Recreation Center, the District 3 Police, the Lower Price Hill Community Council, and the residents themselves. And so there are about 6 different pieces. It's a little complex collaborative, but to the short version is, there's lots of preventative work for the youth at the Joe Williams Family Center, which is one of our centers at Euler School, and that can be recreation, art, dance, music, mentoring. There's programming for the parents. We were talking about the importance of focusing on families, so so we provide counseling and advocacy for the parents of the children in the neighborhood to try to stabilize those families. There's a piece that involves the District 3 Police working with the youth to improve police-community relations. In fact, as we speak, the police are with our kids at the Cincinnati Reds game. During the school year, the police come every third week to, we do structured social-emotional skills groups at Euler School. The police come every third week to sit in and talk to the kids in all three of those grades. So the very first session we had back in the fall, the very first time the police came, we had a sixth grade boy look at Officer Anthony Johnson and say, "Why did you," meaning the police, "kill my uncle?" You know, so there, it's clear that a lot of kids are somewhere along the line developing really negative attitudes towards the police. So, and some of the data we've done has shown that we're already making progress. The kids, because of their involvement in the program, are starting to improve their attitudes. We have a softball game planned for August. We had a basketball tournament both the police and the fire participated in. Those kinds of things, I think, are important. And then there's some other pieces to the grant as well. But so the nice, the collaborative, you know, everybody in a community, we all get along, the agencies get along together, but you never know when you're asking somebody, will you do this? Because you're really asking them to stretch the services that they're already providing.
How much flexibility does the collaborative give you, Jim? Does it give you a lot of different options for dealing with the issue of violence?
Well, we have an advisory board, actually, that meets once a month that oversees the work of the collaborative. It was the city of Cincinnati who sort of told us what kind of outcomes they wanted to see, or at least they looked at what we suggested and said, yeah, that sounds good to us. But there are a lot of ways to accomplish. There's not just one way to accomplish, you know, a particular goal. So, yeah, there is a lot of flexibility. If something isn't working, there's a flexibility to admit that and say, let's try something else.
Jennifer, go a little bit more into the efforts of the YWCA in fighting violence.
Sure. We are doing, with this particular grant, working in primarily four different Cincinnati public schools. We're at Taft, Woodward, Withrow, and Riverview East Academy. And in those schools, we're working not only with the students, but also with the education staff, trying to engage parents. We have brought in a couple different Cincinnati police officers to meet with the youth. We're really trying to work on a couple different areas, one being teen dating violence, working with the youth on understanding and recognizing signs and symptoms of healthy and unhealthy relationships, letting them know what are the boundaries, what should be expected in a healthy relationship. We're also looking at particular groups of youth that the school has identified of having maybe some bullying issues and trying to get them to work together and see each other's strengths and help lift each other up rather than tearing each other down. One of the things that we like about this funding is a little bit of that flexibility, because we sort of went into it with an idea of doing certain curricula. And what we found in a couple of the schools was they really felt they had a need for something else. They knew that they had certain students that they felt were in danger of sort of going into that violence path. And the flexibility of it allowed us to target where the school felt was important, and also has allowed us to do some education with parents and with administrators, teaching staff, to help them understand maybe some things that they're seeing in the class that they might think are just behavioral issues that really may be connected to trauma-based because of the experiences they're having in their homes and in their communities.
So one of the things that allows us a great deal of flexibility is that 75% of our funding goes back to the community, and those community councils are able to determine how they will use those funds to connect the youth, reward the youth, or to provide additional activities for them throughout the term of this process.
Sherry, you mentioned earlier that things have leveled off considerably in terms of violent crime since the start of the year. What's the is there any sense or any expectation from city officials whether we're going to stay at this leveled off place, or do they even know?
Well, of course, you probably never can know. But people are very hopeful because we're in the midst of the summer months when things are typically the worst. And so there's a hope that these programs, we've been doing this pivot for a while in the city, there's a hope that they're really making an impact and that they will see these lower crime next year, the lower crime rates. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out this year. people are watching for sure. And it's an election year, let's not forget.
Yeah. Jim, are you hopeful? Are you encouraged by the fact that things have calmed down considerably since the beginning of the year?
I am, but in all honesty, our program is planting a lot of seeds. So if you told me that the crime rates in our neighborhood was down by 20%, I would say that's great, and I'd like to attribute it to what we're doing. But I think realistically, we may not see the fruit of our labors until later on. But I think we're making real progress with the kids. So it's prevention work, and you don't always see those results in a short period of time, unfortunately.
Jennifer, what about yourself?
Oh, go ahead, Sherry. Oh, I'm sorry. This year is the year where we really saw, I mean, Council, the human service funding and what kind of falls under that category is very important right now to the people that are elected to lead Cincinnati. Human service funding this year, more than $4.3 million at this point. Like, that's the most of the year. And they put an emphasis on this.
Jennifer, I wanted to also ask you, too, what your thoughts are on the fact that things are a little calmer at this point. Are you hopeful?
I think it is hopeful, and I think that one of the things that's important is when the violence and the crime is sort of coming down, it allows communities to sort of build back up and reestablish connections.
So kind of a time to regroup.
Yeah, they've maybe been sort of hiding out and, you know, and I don't mean that necessarily literally, but they're, you know, if they're afraid, they're not coming out. They're not going in the community. They're not trying to build those bonds. And so when the crime rate is down, it allows more of an opportunity for them to sort of connect back up and sort of band together to say, hey, this is our community and we want it to be positive.
Dorothy, how successful is your effort in getting older kids and young adults to work with these younger kids to help them stay out of trouble?
So our target population is 14 to 18. However, we're also working with the Avondale Youth Council who have been in existence for the last 10 years. So they have alumni that they bring to the meetings with the younger youth to be mentors to them. So I would say we've been highly successful. Okay. Some of these young people are actually graduating from college now. They were in the youth council in Avondale and are actually graduating from college at this point in time. So those are great role models for our young people as well.
Yeah. How important is mentoring in this whole effort, Jennifer?
I think it's really important because it really gives the younger youth something to look forward to, something to look up to. It maybe helps teach them some of the skills that they've missed along the way, either from their families, from their schools. It takes a community literally to raise kids. And so if they can have a mentor take them under their wing and teach them some of those maybe specialized skills that they, if it's a professional maybe, and they know a particular skill that the youth haven't been exposed to, it opens up new windows for them and new ideas of maybe something they want to strive for.
Yeah. Jim?
Yeah, I just agree. I think that the mentoring is a critical part of this. And we have actually had some of the older kids in the neighborhood who, on the fence themselves, that have gotten involved and have taken an interest in helping the younger kids. That's been really good. It's empowering for them. They get a lot of positive reinforcement for caring about the younger kids. So it's been, but that mentoring is real important.
Sherry, how much has the opioid crisis, the heroin crisis, impacted violence in our community, and especially the effect on kids?
I can't really speak to like the effect that it has had, but that certainly was a huge part of this discussion. You know, they got the budget back, and it was like, well, how much is really being put to the heroin crisis in our community? And Chris Seelbach put the needle exchange program into the budget, and David Mann helped champion $400,000 for a recovery home. But once they kind of started talking about this additional money that they ended up taking out of like a different capital fund where they shifted some money around and they really had a little bit more room than they thought, they were like, okay, anti-violence, and we really need to look at the heroin crisis. And so some of this money did end up going to Cat House, which really handles a lot of the recovery. and, you know, is known for its very good work on this, ended up getting $87,000. And the Urban Minority Alcoholism and Drug Abuse Outreach Program got $87,000. And that was really the harrowing piece of it. So they didn't look at this money, this human services money, in a bubble, like for anti-violence. They really took a look at whether trying to do both. And if it's stretching the dollars, it always is in City Hall, stretching it. And how much can we do?
Anybody else have any thoughts on that? Impact of the heroin crisis?
Well, we live with it every day.
Yeah. What are you seeing?
We talked about trauma. I guarantee you the kids who grow up in families where there's, if they have both parents, one of them is an opiate addict, that there's a lot of trauma in that family. So it's certainly related.
And you hear that from Children's Services. Like this is a crisis there. The heroin epidemic has reached in there, and you do hear them talk about so much of their work is with these parents who are addicted now. And so it's not just, you know, like a city issue. Like, all these agencies are dealing with this.
And I think it's important to remember that if we don't impact the young people as they're coming along, they're going to feed the pipeline.
Mm.
And so it's one of the spokes in the wheel that's necessary to impact the heroin epidemic, is to make sure that we're not creating more individuals who will become engaged.
So how do each of you measure the success of your efforts? What kind of impact do you think you're having?
Well, we look at a number of things. First of all, we look at how many kids we pull into our programs off of the streets. And we have more youth participating in our activities than ever before. We look at how many parents have agreed to participate in counseling. We use a tool called the DESA, the Devereaux Social Skills Assessment, to see how our kids are doing with respect to building 8 different social-emotional skills, which the literature or the research will show that, you know, the kids that have more of those social skills do more of the good stuff and less of the bad stuff. So we have a lot of different evaluation tools that we use along the way to kind of get an idea if we're on the right track or not.
Mm. Jennifer, what about your effort? How do you measure the success, and what kind of impact do you think you've had?
I think similar in terms of having a variety of tools. We, of course, track just the sheer number of people that we're impacting, and the bulk of our work is students. We also, you know, track numbers of parents and educators. One of the things, because we are presenting as a particular curriculum, is that we'll do pre- and post-tests, and so we can see what level of knowledge did the students have before they participated in the curriculum, and did that make any change from the curriculum that we presented in terms of the teen dating violence. And what we see is generally 93% to 94% increase in knowledge. So they're coming in with a basic amount, and then they're learning something while they're there. And that's really our goal, is that they're learning at least some pieces of information so that when they are leaving that program, they might pass it on to somebody else. You know, we're providing them with some cards. We have red and green flags, and it's a physical thing we can leave with the students that they can take, and they can give it to somebody if they think they're in a dangerous relationship. So we're looking at things like that. We're looking at specific measurements of we take certain indicators of things that they're learning. You know, can they identify what is a red flag? What is a negative sign of a relationship? Can they identify what's a healthy relationship? Are they willing to intervene on somebody else's behalf and do some of the bystander intervention pieces that we're looking at? And so we look at a number of those things to just really try to get a gauge. And if in the results we're seeing an area that's lower than we want, we can go back to the school and we say, you know what, we'd like to do an extra session on this particular area, or you might want to incorporate something into your health class in this area to sort of engage a little bit more information, because we might not get a long amount of time with them. Some of our curriculum are 10 days. So we're always looking for ways that the school can sort of sustain that learning and keep it going forward.
And Dorothy, how do you measure success for your effort?
So we're not a program. We provide technical assistance to the community. So we're measuring engagement. how they utilize their resources, how we're able to attract other adults and young people to the process, and how they begin to solve their own problems. And so we're not a program, so we're not measuring what the young people do specifically, more how they do as a community.
Okay. Thank you, everybody, for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
YWCA Greater Cincinnati Director of Youth Services and Transform, Jennifer Milani, Santa Maria Community Services Youth Development Program Director, Jim Holmstrom, the Urban League's Dorothy Smoot, who is Executive Director of the Community Police Partnering Center, and Cincinnati Inquirer reporter Sharon Coolidge. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition. You can find archives of our programs at WVXU.org. Pete Reitmeier was the producer for today's show. Selena Reeder was the assistant producer. Dave Shermer was the technical director. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now, coming up next on 91.7 WVXU. This week, Hamilton County Prosecutor Joe Dieters announced he would not seek a third trial for Ray Tenzing and the shooting death of Sam DeBose, but Tenzing could face federal civil rights violation charges. Maintenance work on the Brent Spence Bridge continues to cause headaches for commuters, and even some diehard Reds fans are losing patience with the team. We'll discuss these and other stories during our weekly news review on Cincinnati Edition, tomorrow afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.